So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to Love After Lockup, Haha, Mkay. I'm Miss H, and today, Mr. O and I will be talking about Season 3, Episode 1 of Love After Lockup, where we meet 5 new couples. We have Scott and Lindsay, who clearly have a transactional relationship, 2 super dads, John and Sean, and by super we mean they have a lot of kids, and their respective partners, Christiana and Destiny, Maurice and Jessica, who met on Plenty of Fish, and Chevelle and her baby daddy stand-in, Quaylon. We will discuss their stories and students of the week, class dunces, and life lessons. If you like what you hear, please support us and leave a 5-star rating, or any other constructive comments are welcome. And if you watch 90 Day Fiancé, check out our other podcast channel, 90 Day Mkay, Teachable Moments with Miss H and Mr. O. Thanks, stay safe, and enjoy.
Hello, Miss H.
Hello, Mr. O.
Oh, man, back for another season of this one, huh?
Yep, we're back. Well, the season's back, so therefore we are back.
So we are back, right.
Yes.
All right, so I'm just going to start. So since Love After Lockup has been in hiatus for a while, I thought it would be a good idea to kind of reintroduce ourselves and let the listeners know where we're coming from and what we're all about. So Ms. H and I are both teachers who have been friends for a while, and we're actually located bi-coastally. I'm on the East Coast, and Ms. H is from the West Coast.
Ooh, best coast.
No, it's not. We started by doing a 90 Day Fiancé podcast and expanded to covering Love After Lockup last winter in the before times. But anyway, what we do generally on here is have one of us recap one of the couples of the show and then add our commentary, where we tend to add perspective from our lives. Both Miss H and I are pretty sincere people, so while we won't hesitate to point out some of the craziness of this crazy show, we also try to find the good things people are doing as well. So we really aren't interested in making an endless stream of snarky jokes about how dumb and ugly all these people are. So I think that pretty much is about coverage. Do you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think you got it covered. Our learning objectives.
Learning objectives for the season. Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, so let's just jump in the first couple then so we don't waste too much time. So I'm going to cover Sean and Destiny.
Okay.
Ooh. They're all going to be, ooh. Yeah.
Yes, okay. I know. First impressions, idiot.
I know. Oh, my God. All right. So we first meet Sean, who is 45 from Las Vegas, and he's working at a custom car shop with his coworker, Hector. They're talking about Sean's relationship with Destiny, who is the incarcerated half of this couple, and we don't meet her this episode. Sean runs us through his romantic history, which seems to mostly consist of a 22-year-old long on-off relationship with his baby mama, who he has 6 kids with.
God, so many.
But that's not even the most of this episode.
No, it's not.
Sean has moved on from her because he's now in a relationship with Destiny, who he's been dating for about 9 months but hasn't met or seen yet, her excuse being that she gained some weight in prison and is now embarrassed about it. Oh, yeah, and in these 9 months, he's also spent around $35,000 on phone calls and commissary for her. Coworker Hector worries that Sean is getting catfished. Hector's not the dumbest guy. And tells us that Sean is just blindly trusts everyone. Normal people, you have to earn their trust, but not Sean. And he's going to end up dead. Like, this guy's going to die.
He's very sure of that.
He's very sure of that. I've never been as sure as anything as this guy's like, oh, yeah, this dude's gullible and is going to get him killed. Anyway, so he expects Destiny to get out in a couple of days. And during taping, Destiny calls to ask him to go see a bail bondsman regarding her upcoming release. At that point, Sean tells us that he likes dating people in prison because they're more real than people on the outside who are always trying to fool you. But then in the next breath, he also tells us that there are things he hasn't told Destiny, and she needs to know them before she gets out.
Oh, God.
I'm guessing it has something to do with the 6 kids.
Yes, that was my assumption as well.
But anyway, the next time we see him, Sean is embarking on Operation Free Destiny and is on his way to the bail bondsman. The bondsman is very professional and seems to be actually looking out for Sean. Destiny has a $50,000 bond that will cost Sean about $5,000 to cover. But of course, it could cost him all $50,000 if Destiny misses her court date after the release. The bondsman tells us that the bond is rather high because one of Destiny's charges was escape after she cut an ankle monitor off. The bondsman is also very concerned about Sean having never met her before. He says that this is not the first time a situation like this has come into his office, and basically all the other times the inmates skip bail. But for some reason, Sean says that he trusts her and believes that it's possible to turn your life around, because that's what has happened to his father, who was an ex-con. But then again, in the very next breath, he tells us that his father thinks Destiny is just trying to use him to get out of jail. Wow. All right. So we didn't see Destiny.
Oh my gosh.
First impressions of Sean, aside from idiot, which we've pretty much covered, that's a blanket idiot.
Yeah.
Across all.
Gullible
all
idiot? I don't even know. This guy is, I think, the worst. He's surrounded by people who are trying to give him good advice. Mm-hmm. You've got his coworker who says he's going to die. You got his ex-con dad who's saying, trust no one.
Especially no one in prison. Yeah.
Right. You got this bail bondsman guy who's like, she might not come back. And it's like, you're going to ignore all of these people who have good advice to give you.
Right. It's not just ignoring the evidence that are piling up on one side of the equation. It's that your absolute stone cold confidence in the other side of the equation, despite the fact that there is no evidence at all.
Oh, but don't you know they've known each other for a few months now? So he really knows her. He's never known anyone as much as he's known her.
And he hasn't seen a current picture yet.
That is ridiculous to me. I don't know. What do you think, catfish or no?
I guess it depends on what you mean by catfish.
Okay.
I think she is a real person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that exists. And I believe
isn't that true of all catfish?
But I'm saying no, and her name is Destiny. It's like she's not making up a fake like thing. Right,
right.
Those pictures, if I'm making a judgment, those pictures are of her, but from like 20 years ago.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay, age more so than weight.
Yes.
Because I kind of feel like you could, okay, so say you're self-conscious about your weight. You could do an extreme close-up of your face, right? And kind of hide the weight. I know it kind of, you know, shows in your chin sometimes, but you definitely could get around some of that. Like, I don't know, take a picture of your eyes and your nose or something.
Or use the apps that everybody uses.
Oh, the filter. Filter apps. Thin out your face. I don't know if it really is her. Okay, but even going with the age thing, like Rebecca from 90 Day Fiancé, she manages to look 20 years younger, if that's really the thing. But it is incredibly suspicious that he is so willing to send $35,000 without ever seeing this person.
In less than a year.
It's ridiculous.
Like how long would it be, even if a person was, you know, everything you wished for and hoped for, it would still be a couple months before I sent a dime. Right?
And not that excessive amount of money. Okay, I have a first impression. When he said that, you know, he had spent $35,000, I was like, worst dad ever. That was my first impression of him.
Oh, yeah,
because
absolutely.
You are taking away from your six children.
I guarantee he hasn't spent $35.
And he even said, you know, like, well, I have a decent job. I can afford that kind of money. Like, I don't mind spending money on her. It's like, yeah. But what about your six kids?
Right.
Like, that's college tuition for 1 year for one of your six kids.
Oh, yeah. He definitely strikes me as the kind of guy who was like, what? I paid my child support in full. I was like, well.
That's like the bare minimum,
that's the
right?
legal bare minimum that you needed to do to get by. Okay.
Yeah. You could have done so many things, like taking the family on vacation.
Yeah.
That would have been a nice thing to do.
That's a year of college at UNLV. Like, definitely. Yeah.
Right? And so it's just, that was my first thought, was like, wow, you were spending $35,000 on someone you don't even know. And I don't care that you've been talking to this person for 9 months. You haven't even seen that person face to face. You're keeping secrets from that person. You don't know that person.
Yeah.
You don't know each
other. You don't know each other. Because that to me, that's, and it's this one, it's the other one, but this one especially. If you're like, oh, I have a free time this weekend, I will drive to the prison and we'll visit. And they're like, no. I'm like, yeah. Like, no, that's a deal breaker.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not going to send money to the person who never wants me to visit. Sure. Yeah, let's talk about his dad for a second. I thought it was interesting that he came in with the perspective of, you know, like knowing someone close to him who's been to prison. Mm-hmm. And even his dad is trying to tell him, like, no one is trustworthy in prison. It's like, listen to your dad.
I think his dad was the other thing. Is like, listen, if she gets out, you know, and she puts her life together and she starts being productive and has a job, right, then don't hold being in prison against her. But when they're in prison, mm-hmm, nah, like, he's like, because I didn't think the dad was like, oh, when I was in prison, I would have done anything. I would have done anything to get out. Like,
yeah. But I mean, I do trust that his dad's reformed and that's where he's kind of coming from. He's coming from the space where he's just like, well, my dad was able to get through it and he's a good person. This mm-hmm person is probably a good person. It's possible.
Well, I mean, there's the big delusion that people have. It's like, mm-hmm, my dad's a good person. I'm a good – nobody thinks they're a bad – okay. It's a few people think they're bad people. But most people don't think they're bad people, right? And you're like, well, I'm a good person and I really like this person. So that must mean they're a good person too. I wouldn't like a bad person. So, yeah. Because let's face it too. Why is he really into her? Because she's hot. That's it.
Yeah. And because not even current day hot, as he like knows.
That's what he wants. He has her on his cracked ass phone.
Oh, God.
Right. Yeah. I make good money. I can send $35,000. I got a cracked ass phone. Like, so he can be like, well, look at her. Oh, yeah. Look what I got. Like that's.
Oh, yeah. She's hot. It's like, all right. That's nice. Okay. And then let's talk about the bail. $50,000. And once again, that's another year in college for one of your kids.
Right. Well, I mean, you don't have to pay that unless they skip.
Okay, let's be real here. Do you think she's going to show up?
That was actually the question I had. It's like, is she going to show up to – she's totally skipping bail, right?
She has a history of not showing up to things. In fact, isn't the reason why she's back in jail is because she escaped? She took off her ankle monitor from the first time around when she was in the halfway house.
I guess I don't –
that's like extreme.
I guess I don't – it doesn't – I guess I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me to skip a hearing unless you just want out of the halfway house. You're like, nah, I was out of jail. I'm out of jail. I got to be all the way free. This halfway house ain't cutting it. Because I think they had mentioned that even when she gets out, she's not going to live with him. She's going to be in a halfway house again.
Yeah. I don't understand things like that, like breaking off your ankle monitor. Like, are you going to live to be a fugitive the rest of your life? Like, you're definitely thinking today. Right? Today, I don't have to go to jail, but what about tomorrow? Oh.
That's what I was like, because when she's out on parole, it's not like she's already been convicted of what she's ever been convicted of, right? So unless she does something additionally wrong, nothing's going to happen at this hearing that she skips, right?
Right.
It's not going to be bad for her to go to this hearing. There's nothing to
it. You were already out. That's what I don't get. You were out. All you have to do is keep your stupid ankle monitor on, follow a couple rules.
Yeah. So, I mean, I assume then when I hear that and the illogic comes in, there's going to be drug problems too.
Yes. So that was my thought too, was what would kind of possess someone to do something like that? And it's like, well, most of the times it's drugs. You know, mm-hmm, they want to get high. And so they're not thinking about
past getting high
consequences. Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. They don't think about anything but getting high. And, you know, so they don't think about the consequences and things like that. That was also my thought, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. They actually very much reminded me of John and Christiana so much that I kind of had watched this episode on Friday when it first came on and then wasn't taking notes. I was just going to do a quick run through. And I actually didn't really realize that they were two separate couples, which is ridiculous because they don't look alike, but then they kind of are alike.
There's some common motifs. I can hear you.
There's definitely a lot of similarities in these stories. Okay, so we have John, who's 46, who is a youth service professional. John is a traditional Native American who values his spirituality and culture, even though he is only half. John met Christiana on a dating website. Christiana is in prison for burglary and a parole violation when she escaped a halfway house. John thinks that Christiana is nice and they have meaningful conversations, like her phone call to John where she tells him she can't wait to get out and suck his dick. They have been dating for 3 months and Christiana is due to be released soon. John tells us about his relationship history, which includes 4 marriages and an additional 2 engagements at the young age of 46. He says that his relationships weren't really happy and he just went through the motions. He thinks that he really loves this one, and with love, anything can make it through. And history be damned as John is attempting to convert his truck into a wedding chapel / honeymoon suite so they can get married in the time between the prison and the halfway house. His brother Cordell is over to help him construct the thing, and he wonders what will happen if she says no, because they haven't really spent any time together in the free world. John tells Cordell that Christiana has a history of drugs, which is why he believes she's had trouble staying out of prison. But he thinks that this time will be different because she will have a reason to stay away from drugs. Basically him. He knows that there's a possibility she will say no to the marriage, but he's always willing to take risks for love. They successfully build a small staircase to the bed of his truck along with a platform in the bed and some dangling lights. We later meet Sapphire, John's 18-year-old daughter, as he's making some bare root tea. He's asked a simple question, how many kids do you have? And he tries to name them all, kind of counting on his fingers and in his head, and then he comes to 8. He has 8 children. He knows that 2 of them, Abram and Clarice, still live with him. But he tells us that none of his children know he's dating someone, let alone someone who is incarcerated. Sapphire asks if he's preparing for another powwow, and John tells her slowly that it's for a different kind of ceremony, of, you know, the matrimonial kind. He tells Sapphire about Christiana, and Sapphire just, like, jaw dropped. She's just skeptical as she recounts a girlfriend her dad met on Craigslist because John put out an ad asking Santa for a girlfriend, and some idiot replied. She also notes that her dad is quick to commit. You think? The first thing Sapphire does is look up her arrest record and shows her dad. John says that, you know, people change, and usually he gets a vibe if something is off, and that just hasn't happened yet. Sapphire then brings up the possibility that Christiana's criminal record may get John in trouble, and we find out that John doesn't have such a clean past himself, as he has been in prison about 10 years ago for forging checks. He had been in prison for 12 years. Sapphire is concerned that if they have a native wedding, that they can't get divorced unless she breaks one of the rules. John is claiming that this is the most solid and deep connection he's ever had. So what was your first impression of John? We only met John this time.
John creeps me the hell out.
Okay.
He just gives off such creepy vibes to me that it's very disturbing.
I am very confused by his timeline. How did you fit so much life in 46 years?
That's true.
When you were in prison for 12 of them. Yeah. You were 12 years in prison. So, like, let's just subtract that part, right? So that would put you at 34. So 34. And so let's just kind of pretend like prison was the tail end.
Okay.
So by the age of 34, he's been married 4 times.
Right. So, and assuming he didn't get married until he was 18, right? So,
yeah.
That's 4 marriages and 2 engagements he squeezed into 16 years.
Yeah.
And 8 kids.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it makes sense if you're just like popping out the kids like every couple years. And then if you're getting a new wife every 4 years, like, and everybody has 2.
The four wives and, you know, 2 children per wife. That's not crazy. And
yeah,
we wouldn't be really surprised if one of the engagements had a kid involved too, or, you know, but
sure.
Like just the part where he couldn't name his kids. What the shit is that? I've never seen anybody. I've known people who had a lot of kids, right? And I've known people in families with a lot of kids. Have you ever known anybody in a family where there's like 8 or 10 kids or something?
Yeah.
They all have this common thing where they can go, oh, how many brothers do you have? They're like 10.
Because people ask them all the time, right? And they probably have to practice.
And they just rattle them off. They can all say them really fast, right? And he's like, wait, there's a... And like, I'm trying to remember the friggin' lineup of the 2002 Orioles or something. Like, wait, no, was he on this team? No.
No, that's not one of my kids. I don't know.
So, wait, who played second base? Oh, yeah, right. Like, he's doing it like that.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It kind of reminds me of Good Will Hunting when he makes up the fact that he has, like, a bazillion brothers and sisters and he's asked to name them all.
Well, I can't remember that. Does he just do it really fast?
He does it really fast. And he's like, so what's their names again? And then he does the exact same names again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, between that, between Santa bring me a girlfriend for Christmas.
Oh, that was pretty desperate.
And it worked. How does this work? How do normal guys not be able to get women all the time, you know, and not, you know, and he puts out creepy ass John puts out bring me a girlfriend for Christmas.
Yeah. Santa, I want a girlfriend. I don't know.
Because he dated her. Like, oh my, so weird.
Yeah. So my question for you was going to be, what is the most desperate thing you would do to get a girlfriend fast?
No, I don't want to have a girlfriend.
You're
fast.
Like, no, that's the objective is not there. <That's>, I reject the objective.
Yeah, I reject that objective. Like, why do I need to have a girlfriend fast?
Well, okay, let's say it was a competition or some kind of bet.
You're just
trying to get a girlfriend fast. What would you do?
Lower my standards.
Well, I feel like he's done that. Step one accomplished for John, at least.
Yeah, look in prison. I'm pretty sure I could nail that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Christiana, like I said, I was so confused because the similarities between Christiana and John's story and Sean and Destiny's story, I feel like there's Sean and John are both around the same age.
Yes.
They both have a ton of kids, and they both have some kind of experience of prison that makes them feel like hopeful for their partners, right? John being in prison, Sean having a dad in prison.
I'd say the difference is, and I'm interested to see how this plays out, is Sean's romantic history is rather limited. It seems like it's been pretty much this one woman, right? The whole time. And yeah, John's is not. Like, John is like, whichever way the winds blow, they blow me into a woman and we're engaged now. Like,
oh, yeah. Blows me into Santa's wish list.
Yeah. Right. Especially when he's like, oh. Because it was funny because, like, the way he, like, cringily acted, like, he seemed at the beginning like a guy who was like, ooh, and she was like, you know, I'll suck your dick. I'm excited to suck your dick. And he was like, ooh, gee, naughty. Like, I was like, has this guy ever had his dick sucked? And apparently, yes, he has.
So, lots of times. Well, no, Mr. O, that's not how babies happen. Jeez.
Oh, geez.
I need to go back to sex ed. That's not how it happens at all.
That's usually where it, you know, progresses from there. But yes.
It's in the same ballpark, but you know. Oh, goodness. I felt like he did that for the cameras. Plus, that's got to be super embarrassing if your daughter's in the room over, right?
Oh, I don't think that was when her daughter was over. So that was thankfully. Ugh. To subject
that
the
would be
with that.
Traumatic.
I'm not looking forward to, because that creeps me out to the, oh, we're going to get married as soon as she walks out of the doors. That would creep. Come on, how creepy is that?
That's weird.
How creepy is that?
I mistook this couple. I thought they were the ones, the other couple, Sean and Destiny. I thought they had been together for 3 months. No, it was this couple that had been together for 3 months. Could you imagine 3 months, you haven't really seen this person in person. The first time you see them in person, you're like, all right, we're getting married right now.
Right.
Oh, and we have to do it real quick and consummate the marriage in my honeymoon suite. That's
in the truck. Yeah.
Because we got to drive you to the halfway house.
Yeah. And we have to get there. We have a time limited thing to get there. So.
Oh my gosh. Everything about that just seems so
We're
going
to have to skip the foreplay. It's just going to be marriage.
Yeah, we're just going to have to get down and dirty because we got to make it to the halfway house. Cordell's going to drive the truck. We're just going to be in the back in the quote honeymoon suite.
Just banging it out. And then, yeah, we'll get there. Like,
oh gosh, we're multitasking back here.
And that's his idea of like a grand romantic gesture is, listen, we got 10 minutes and we're going to do it.
I hope he paints that thing because it was just like, you know.
Oh, wood. Like the stairs and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. If he doesn't, then it's like, what was the point? Just get a ladder.
All right. All right. So, wait, where was he from? I forget what that one was.
They were from Cresco, Iowa.
Iowa. Okay. Because this one came up. This is Maurice and Jessica. So Jessica is 33 and again from Las Vegas. Like half the people on this show are from Las Vegas.
Maybe there's a lot of prisons in that area.
I don't know. But anyway, she's talking to her parents about getting on a flight, and her parents are expressing concerns about her actions. And that's because she's getting on a flight to go get Maurice, who she met on Plenty of Fish, which is not a prison dating website, but just a regular dating website.
I have thoughts about that.
We'll get there. And is serving 7 years for first-degree burglary. Maurice grew up in Compton and in and around gangs, and production is not shy about letting us know that by introducing him through the thuggiest pictures they could find of him.
Oh, God.
Maurice has a 9-year-old daughter, and Jessica is confident that he'll be on the straight and narrow now because he'll want to be there for her. They have been seeing each other for 4.5 years and are actually already married, which they obviously did while Maurice was in prison using $2 wedding rings. Jessica's story also comes with a lot of family drama. Her parents are doing that parent thing where they are there for her but don't really support what she's doing. And they both have some strong words of caution for her before she leaves to go get Maurice. It's much like you would expect. You don't really know this guy. I don't think you know what you're getting yourself into, and so on and so on. But the bigger drama is between Jessica and her sister. When Jessica started dating Maurice, her sister completely cut Jess out of her life, and they haven't spoken to each other in over 4 years. The stated reasoning was that Jessica was being a bad example for her niece. We then have a scene that underscores the tension between Jessica and her sister. Jessica is driving home and decides to drive past her sister's house because they live actually really close to each other. She stops the car down the block, presumably at production's request, and eventually the sister comes out to check the mail. And when she does, Jessica has an absolute anxiety attack seeing her sister and panics and just like drives like right past the sister in the car. It's like, I think she recognized me, in order to get away. So that's where we end her. So we didn't see Maurice. I think we only saw one of the inmates this time, right? Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
Over video call, yes.
Uh-huh. So what do we think? First impressions of Jessica?
Her whole story is so sad. I mean, just even look at her. She looks sad.
Mm-hmm.
What is with that she has the darkest circles under her eyes? It's mm-hmm. like, is that from lack of sleep? Is that from crying?
Right.
Just everything about her just seems really sad to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Especially that the sister, what I guess what struck me is she kept saying, my sister cut me off. And I was like, did she cut you off? Or do you misunderstand what that phrase means? Because cut you off means that your sister was giving you money.
Right. I think she means cut her out of her life.
That's what I assumed, but I was like, you keep saying that, and I don't think you know what it means.
Right. Oh, goodness. Okay, so let's start off. Let's talk about Plenty of Fish, which is the worst, in my personal experience, the worst dating app, site, whatever. And let me tell you that I've tried almost all of them, it feels like.
Uh-huh.
I really think I have at some point. And if anything, I just had like mediocre to like, you know, positive feelings about anyone. And I guess that really has to do with who is available at the time that you use something. So I guess, you know, you can't, it's not the site itself that's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you, Plenty of Fish attracts the worst people. The absolute worst dates I've ever had from dating sites have been from Plenty of Fish. The absolute worst conversations I've ever had, Plenty of Fish. I don't think I've had any pleasant experiences from Plenty of Fish. I think I went out with 2 people from Plenty of Fish. One, I admit, it was okay. Just there wasn't a connection. There was nothing wrong with him.
Uh-huh.
And actually, coincidentally enough, I ended up going out with him again 10 years later because I saw him on Tinder, but I didn't realize it was the same person.
Oh, that's fun. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was fun. But he was fine, and he was a nice guy. The second guy that I ever went out with on Plenty of Fish was the worst person ever. He was just awful. I cannot even tell you how awful he was. And then, like I said, I've had several conversations with people that were just awful. So my personal opinion on Plenty of Fish, it really is kind of like,
interesting.
Rounds up the worst of them. Okay, and then my theory on why that is. Why is it that Plenty of Fish seems to attract the worst of the worst and these other sites
don't? Does it attract the worst of the worst, or does it happen to direct them your way? There could be a different, you know?
It should be called Plenty of Trash. I think the reason why, and maybe it's, you know, different. And once again, it's one of those things where it depends on when you use it, because it's not that these sites are terrible. It's just who happens to be on at the time that you're on looking, right?
And where. These vary regionally big time.
That is true, too, because I think, you know, your experience with one site where, you know, might be popular in one area, maybe less of a chance for success in another area. But my theory on it was that because Plenty of Fish was absolutely free, mm-hmm. and because Plenty of Fish has, they were the only ones that I can ever recall that you could put as your status that you were married and looking to have an affair, that you were looking just to hook up. Like, the fact that you put, like, those kinds of what you're looking for, and they can be somewhat, like, you know, not really serious or long-term, mm-hmm. that in combination with the fact that it's absolutely free, so it's, like, low commitment.
Sure.
I think that's why it attracts some of the, you know, maybe not so serious people. Like, if you're really trying to be in a relationship, you would not go to Plenty of Fish. If you're looking for a hookup, sure, you could easily filter that out on Plenty of Fish.
Okay. I'll take your word on that, because I haven't.
I was going to say, you're going to have to take a look at it.
I haven't gotten to that point yet. Oh, we'll see how desperate things get later. But right now it's super frustrating, because you can't. It's all quarantine. You can't do anything anyway. So what am I going
to? Yeah. You can talk to people.
I can talk to people, and then you kind of run out of things to say, because you're like, this is the point when I would have like asked you on a date like weeks ago. Like, what are we?
Right.
This is kind of, like, what are you doing in quarantine still? I don't know. Like, you know, it's kind of boring.
Yeah, so she says that Maurice is her dream guy. And I'm not going to lie, Maurice is a good-looking guy. He's a good-looking guy. And then she says, oh, he's tall, he's funny. And it's like, maybe what you should add to your list is law-abiding citizen.
I mean,
that seems like a simple thing.
Well, this one, she's known him for 4.5 years. So she can say he's funny, right?
Yeah.
Because some people are like, oh, yeah, they're really funny. And I was like, have you talked to them? But I'm really interested to meet him, because you know, the way production played that, the way production showed the pictures, they made it look like he is currently in a gang and is like throwing up signs at his Facebook pictures and stuff like that. And it's like,
I doubt that.
I don't think that's true anymore. Like, that doesn't.
No.
So why are we looking at this as our introduction to him? So.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. But once again, the dream guy list.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if you were making a list of dream guy. It's so weird that tall comes up so fast.
Oh, you know, I used to hang out with when I partied in my 20s. I hung out with this posse of girls that were all quite a bit taller. They were like 5'9 or taller. Mm-hmm. I was definitely the short one in the group. And their whole thing was 6'2 or above. And it's just like, okay, well, good luck with that. And it's just like, if you were not 6'2 or above, they wouldn't
look at you.
You have
literally just eliminated 95% of all your potential
dates. I know, right? But they would say, oh, it's because we're tall. We're tall. So we need tall guys too. It's
but
like,
would you,
huh?
I would imagine if it was anybody would choose, I would think so. Not anybody, I guess. I take that back. But I think most people, given the choice, he'd be like, he could be 6'2 and boring as hell and just a big lump. Or he could be 5'10 and really charming and really funny. Like, who do you want? Who's going to be like, yeah, I'll take the 6'2 guy. That's what I want.
Well, I was going to say, so I've talked about my 6'2 friend before, and she actually doesn't care. She's just like, I'll date a guy shorter than her.
I think there's a range where you care, where it's like, you know, if you're, I would probably say, you know, just shooting things out there. If you're between like, you know, 5'8 and maybe 6 foot, then you're like, oh, I really want a tall guy, because you can still find a guy that's taller than you. If you're 6'2 and you're like, I only want guys taller than me, then you're like, okay, well, I might as well stop dating then, right? You're like, so you just have not resigned yourself, but you just like have at some point in your life been like, yeah, I'm not going to date somebody taller than me. That's not in the cards. So why would I care anymore? Just let's go.
I had a coworker who was 6'5 or 6'6. She was very tall. And her husband is like 6'9, 6'10. And she met him. There is an actual thing called the Tall People's Club. So I keep telling my tall girlfriends, I was like, just join the Tall People's Club and then you can meet your future husband then, if like that's what you care
right.
about is just
because
dating
I honestly think that because shorter guys also get really salty about it. Like, oh, you ask me how tall I am, I'll ask you what your ways. Right. That kind of stuff. But a lot of times it's like people don't care how tall you are. But when you especially when on dates, when it's like you're too short, when you lie about it, when you say you're 6 foot and you're like 5'8", then you're like, it's not about like, oh, this guy is short. It's about like, this guy just lied to me for no reason. Like, that's strike one.
Let me also throw in something with the lying. it's not even that you're, well, it is. Lying about that is dumb. But I think it's also the fact that you know if you're lying about it, that you're insecure about that. And anytime anyone comes off as insecure, it's really unattractive.
Yeah.
Right? Right. So kind of going back to that, like confidence is attractive. Mm-hmm. And so if you're lying about something, it's because you're just like, well, I don't feel good about my height. So I'm going to lie about it.
Right.
It's like, well,
which is a weird thing to not feel good about because you can literally do nothing about it.
Right. Okay. So her parents, you said that they were supportive. Her dad said something where when they were talking about they were going to have like an actual wedding.
Oh, right.
Another wedding or something. Right. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that, you know, he's not even sure if he's going to go because a wedding has to be earned. And it was like, what does that mean?
That means if he's going to pay for it, he wants, like, he's not going to pay for it unless the guy, like, wins him over and earns it. And I like the guy.
Okay.
Like, I think that's what he meant. Because, I don't know, she can have a wedding if she wants. Well, I mean, I've said she would, but she clearly can't afford it. She clearly has money problems. Based on the car she was driving, right?
She said that was her mom's old car.
Her mom's old car, right. And it wasn't necessarily the car. Yeah, fine, cars are cars. I drive cars into the ground myself, right? I don't think. Mm-hmm. But if it's actually broken, like when the window is broken, I fix the window. I don't duct tape it closed.
Oh, God. Oh, I had a friend who had this car where the window was kind of broken. Mm-hmm. And it was so funny because in the summertime, it was like broken shut,
uh-huh.
You know? So it was like you couldn't roll it down and it was so hot in there. And then I remember the time that it decided to like open up and get stuck open. It was when it was raining. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I fix those things. When my speaker breaks, I fix it. So... That to me is the part where it's like, oh, geez, she has a duct tape closed window. Yeah, fine, old cars or what. But so I worry about that in terms of her needing her parents' money, right? Because, because like I said, her parents were those parents who were like, listen, we don't want to cut you out of our lives. We think what you're doing is dumb and we don't like it and we will not financially support that aspect of your life. But they didn't do like the sister did and said, that's it, you're gone, you're dead to us. Go away. Bye.
Right, yeah. Okay, so moving on to Scott and Lindsay. We first meet Scott, 51. He's a business owner from upstate New York who has just recently moved to Olive Branch, Mississippi. He hires an interior designer, Sharon, to help spruce up the house and have someone to talk to on camera. He bought the house for his girlfriend, Lindsay, 27, who's in prison for possession of meth and a firearm. He asks Sharon what high-energy colors are because he wants that in the bedroom. He tells us that he's been dating on a as-need basis for 10 years, and he's not trying to date a train wreck. He came across Lindsay's profile on a prison dating website, which he says is just like Match.com. He says that he sees marriage in their future, even though his family has no idea that they're marrying. Or dating, sorry. Scott tells us that Lindsay's crimes include dealing meth, a high-speed car chase, and having a firearm. We immediately get to meet Lindsay, who is originally from Dublin, California. She tells us that she has a history of dating older men. She talks about the beginning of their relationship when they first started writing. She says they immediately clicked, and she thought he was different because he wasn't immediately trying to talk about sex or ask her for nudes. She says that he's been her support and financial support, giving her about $15,000, and even financially taking care of her daughter and her mom. She says she sees a future with Scott, including a big ring and a big house. Lindsay tells us how coronavirus has affected their time in prison, mainly quarantining and being let out in small units. She thinks that it's made everyone on edge and cranky, and there is a dark cloud over everything. And so that little bit was from one of those commercial clips.
Ones, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the commercial clips that you tend to fast forward through.
Right. I saw that one. I saw
it. Oh, good, good. Okay, so what was your first impression of, I guess we saw Scott and Lindsay this time.
We did see Scott and Lindsay. I can't. They are both, you know what? Actually, I'm thinking about it. They might both end up getting what they want.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like this is one of those transactional relationships.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I think they recognize that it's a transactional relationship. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's kind of the problem we've seen in the past is when one person really is in it for love and they're like clueless that it's transactional. That's usually when you have problems.
Right. Yeah. I don't think I don't think that that Scott is kind of fooling himself why she's in this relationship.
No.
And well, especially, I mean, I still think he's pretty creepy too, because
oh, he's super creepy.
Okay, so what is an as-needed basis dating?
Yeah, my like thought on there, or like the idea that I got, was like he's just dating to hook up. He's just dating someone long enough to like sleep around with them, kind of have a friends with benefits-ish situation.
I think it's one thing.
Prostitutes?
Yeah, it's hookers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was also what I was thinking. But I don't know why he would say dating at that point, right? You don't date prostitutes, do you?
I mean, I think some of the guys who see prostitutes have like a regular, and they would be like, I'm not dating, but it's like dating, you know?
I feel like he wouldn't even say that. I feel like he would just like exclude that person from your dating history, right? So let's say you are that guy who's like regularly seeing maybe the same two prostitutes for a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
Would you consider, like, if you talked about your dating past, would you be like...
Okay, so I don't think you would... I think you would, especially him. Because I think he was like for the last 10 years. And I don't think he's the kind of guy that would be like, oh no, for the last 10 years I've been celibate. He wants to make sure people know he's still been getting busy. Right.
Yeah, he definitely does seem like he wants people to know, like, hey, yeah, I'm having sex a lot.
Right.
Like, what are your high energy colors?
Right.
Red, green. Yeah, let's put that in the bedroom.
I'm still at a loss for that. Like, that, I don't know. He says that, like, yeah, high energy, we need high energy colors in the bedroom. I was like, so you need extra help in the bedroom then? That's what you're saying?
You know what works better than that? Blue. Blue pills. Blue pills is a high energy color for you.
That's a high energy pill for that guy, for him, because the other 50-year-olds are going to be jealous.
Oh, my gosh.
Are they going to be jealous, though? That was so weird to me.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe, like, okay, so that was going to be my question to you. Like, when you're 50, do you think you'd be jealous of Scott?
No.
I was going to say, I feel like maybe you'd be like, oh, he's got an attractive girl. But you know that it's not as simple as he has an attractive girl. That comes with other baggage.
Right.
Like,
yes.
She's into you because she's a gold digger.
Right.
She's a little crazy. She needs a lot of help.
Yeah, she goes, you know, in, like, and out of prison. Like, that's, those things are going to be like, so it's definitely, but he, that's my issue with him, amongst many issues. Is that's what he only sees, and he's, again, valuing her entire worth of she's really hot because she is a very attractive person, right?
She is. She's a cute girl. Absolutely.
And so he's just like her worth and how much other people will be jealous of what I have is 100% based on how hot is she. Like, because
right.
I really think – because he's putting that – and I think a lot of 50-year-olds would be like, how do you, every all the other guy, 50-year-old guys can be jealous. He was like, yeah, I'm not jealous of your prison girlfriend, buddy. Like, I don't.
You have at it. Good luck with that.
Exactly.
He is a walking contradiction. There are a couple things that he said that I'm just like, why are you contradicting yourself? So one of them that he talked about was, you know, he wants to. Since he's older, he doesn't want the drama in his life. He's not wanting to date any train wreck. And it's like, okay, so you're not wanting to date any train wreck, but you are exclusively looking on prison websites, dating websites. Those two things don't go together.
They don't. Like, that's like the definitional of train wreck.
Yeah. You don't just choose and accidentally go to prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are intentional choices that people are making that land themselves in prison.
Right. And like,
far by the most part, right?
Yeah. I mean,
talking
sure,
the general population.
There's always, I guess there could be exceptions, but she's not one of them. She had a trunk full of meth and led the police on a high speed chase. Like, this is not.
That was a choice.
Yeah.
Yep, that was a choice.
That was a choice. And I know he's kind of like doing it to be like, oh, she did it for her daughter. And it's like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't all add up to me.
But I don't feel bad for him. I don't feel bad for her. Just like you said, in that weird way, I kind of feel like this may work out for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not going to be any kind of relationship that I would want to have in my life. But if this is what both of them want out of a relationship, she clearly does not care about any relationship except for the money. Like, she just like,
oh, yeah.
That,
The fact that she says big ring, big house.
Yeah. Of yeah. caring about a relationship in, except for money.
No.
All right.
Agreed.
So, last ones is Chevelle and Quaylon. We'll get there.
Yes, I said Quaylon.
we'll get there. So Chevelle is a 31-year-old single mom from Kansas City, and she feels like she owes it to her child to raise her with a father.
Oh, God.
Questionable already. Her solution to this is to date an inmate. Okay, so.
It's never the solution.
He says Quaylon.
Yes.
She says Quaylon.
Yep. Noticed
okay.
it.
Is 29 years old and finishing up his 12-year sentence for armed robbery. I'm going to go with Quaylon because that's what he says.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. They met through a friend's ex who was serving time with Quaylon. They have been dating for about 2.5 years. We see Chevelle ask her family what they think about her plans to make a new life with Quaylon, and none of them are all that eager to speak up because they all seem to think she's getting herself into trouble. Chevelle's mom says that Chevelle loves and trusts too easily, and this whole situation kind of reminds her of the time Chevelle got swindled by a fake rap producer. We do get to see Quaylon in prison, who tells us that he made a huge mistake at 17, and now he's had to miss so much growing up, even prom. And again, I'm frustrated with production because they leave in the edit where he says dreams and aberrations.
God.
I actually blame production more than I blame him on that. So yeah. We're back with Chevelle, who is reading over all the love letters she has gotten from Quaylon and tells us about their sex life. They've never actually had sex because he's been in prison the whole time. But they've done phone sex, which was way spicier than anything else Chevelle has ever done before. Quaylon is excited for their first time having sex and goes into some rather interesting details about how he envisions it. It involves the word gladiator.
Oh, God.
Yeah, okay. But here at the very end, well, we see what is likely to be the biggest conflict for this season. Quaylon is going to live with Chevelle in Kansas City, but his mom thinks that he should move back to Texas to be with her.
Yeah.
Things should get heated really quickly since Chevelle and Quaylon's mom will be road tripping together to get Quaylon from his release. All right, so
that's going to be the highlight, I already know.
Yo, that's it. That's the conflict is Chevelle versus Quaylon's mom. Absolutely.
Yep, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, first impressions of, I guess, Chevelle, we did see Quaylon. We saw him not just on the phone. We saw him in an actual, like, FaceTime video. Not
yeah,
FaceTime video,
yeah.
But, you know, production was there.
Quaylon, my first impression of him was Prison Urkel.
I could see that. Yeah. I mean, he definitely seems to be somebody who went to prison young for a long time.
Yes.
For
yes.
a long time. And is probably a completely different person now than he was when he went in. Like I.
Oh, absolutely. But I think, and we've kind of talked about this on this particular show in the past, like going to prison at a really young age almost like stunts your maturity
mm-hmm.
to whatever age you were when you entered prison. And so I kind of feel like maybe even a lot of what he is telling her is what he thinks he should be as a man of his age now.
Sure.
He should be someone who could be a responsible father,
mm-hmm.
a responsible partner. But it'll be interesting to kind of see if he really can be. I do feel like he definitely comes off as very self-reflective.
Right.
And so that gives me a little bit of hope that his intentions are there and that'll kind of carry him through. But I am a little concerned that, like we said, he, you know, went to prison so young of an age.
Sure. And that seems to be what Quaylon's mom's issue is going to be. Is mm-hmm. like, no. He don't know anything. Like, he went to prison. He was 17. Yeah. He's been in prison. He doesn't know anything about – that was Chevelle's mom's issue. He doesn't know anything yeah. about being an adult, right? But – and that's what really took me off because last season we had – what's his face? Michael. Right, who kept doing these things where he would use the wrong word in a phrase.
Oh, God.
Right, and they yeah. would always leave it in. And I didn't mind it because Michael was an asshole, right? And
yeah.
I didn't like it. But when you show this guy who's clearly trying to come across as self-reflective and trying mm-hmm. to, you know, sound mature, and you kind of throw that at him and like, oh, look at this guy using the wrong words. I'm like,
yeah.
that rubs me the wrong way. But yeah, I hear you. It's whew.
It'll be interesting. Yeah. So let's kind of talk about just Chevelle. Okay, mm-hmm. First of all, why is she pronouncing her man's name wrong? And she got her whole family to as well.
My question was going to be, how can you be ready to commit to somebody whose name you can't pronounce correctly? Or is she just going to be so controlling that she's going to be like, oh, no, no. I like pronouncing your name like this better. This is how your name is pronounced
it's
now.
It's just easier. It's just easier
it's
that way.
It's not even easier. It's like, there's nothing wrong about it. There's nothing hard about saying Quaylon versus Quaylon.
No, it isn't. Quaylon. I think Quaylon's like maybe a little bit easier to say than Quaylon.
I don't know. It depends on how long you've been around like people. I've known a lot more people who have that, you know, teaching in a school that's, you know, hugely minority school. Okay. I'm way used to people having that Lon at the end of their name or Ron at the end of their name. Like that sounds more, that sounds decently natural to me. So I don't get it.
Well, why do people drop the G on like Coolin versus Cooling? Well, it's the same freaking word. I feel like it's the same thing.
I feel like emphasizing a different syllable is something that's different, but maybe not. Actually, it's funny. That's actually a thing. Random teaching note. When like two words get put together, when there are two words that are put together, you tend to emphasize like the first one. So like when they first invented hot dogs, right? It was like hot dog. You emphasize the second one, right?
Yeah.
Hot dog. Boy Scouts. Right, when they first get invented. But when you start thinking of it as, when society at least starts thinking of it as a thing, no, it's a hot dog. Those are Boy Scouts. They tend to move the syllable to, the emphasis to the first syllable.
Oh, no wonder people struggle with English. Like, why are there these rules? Oh, poor ESL people. Okay, so Chevelle at one point tells us that she has given $5,000, which, you know, in the whole grand scheme of things and comparatively isn't that much. Mm-hmm. But it always, like, really upsets me when there's children involved.
Sure.
Because it's like, to me, you're taking away from your child when you're giving your money to someone else. And I get that this is supposed to be your partner, but it's like, I don't think they've proved that they are worthy of being your partner if they're still in prison or if they're far away. Like, if you're not, like, in a relationship, like, face-to-face with them. And I would say this applies to 90 Day Fiancé people as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you haven't tested this relationship to say that it's worth the amount of money that you're sending them to, once again, take away from the child that you have. That you're supposed to be caring for.
Right.
So it really bothers me.
It does, but part of that is indicative of something that's I've seen before of how ridiculous like phone rates are from jail.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm looking here because it can cost like $10 or $20 for 15 minutes. So it's like not hard over 4.5 years. It's really not that hard to have spent $5,000 altogether just in phone calls.
I feel like you have to have a budget, right? So let's say you were dating someone in prison. I'd be like, okay, letters for days, and then I'll call you once a week for 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, okay, but I mean, still, if you do 15 minutes, if it's $10, I could do the math. It's over 4 years. Plus, and that's just that. The commissary is also ridiculous. Like, the way people get gouged in jail is pretty obscene.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So I feel like it's one of those things that she could, if she spent $5,000 over 4 years.
Yeah, that's not unreasonable. That, like, I didn't know it
doesn't.
That
it long. Doesn't feel. Yeah, that's how. Oh, 2.5. I'm sorry, 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, he would be like, but I didn't actually get anything. You know, like, it wasn't that much stuff. It just makes a huge amount of money, and I don't know. But depending on her budget, but it appears she still lives with her mom.
Yeah. Right? Okay. Did you see his letters? He has the nicest writing. It was so lovely.
Right.
It was very clear. It should be.
You have plenty of time to write the letters. Just slow down.
Oh my gosh. He has really nice writing.
Do it right. Mm-hmm. Right? That I don't know if that speaks well or not. I don't know what that means. Probably nothing.
I don't know. To me, it seems like he cares about writing and like, sure. I don't know, maybe he took school seriously.
Mm-hmm.
That's the impression I get. And, you know, anyone who takes school seriously, you know.
Yeah, we like
a
that.
Higher up in
I
my
like,
book.
I appreciate people who have good handwriting. Man, that's so much easier to grade.
We've seen some pretty crappy writing, which was interesting this year because we were grading AP exams and a majority of them were typed, which is unlike usual because, you know, usually you have to handwrite AP exams So that was interesting to see more typed stuff, but then it just made whoever hand wrote them that much worse. Every time you came across a handwritten one, you're like, oh. I feel like
some of the typed ones had some...
Oh, there was some weird formatting issues.
Interesting formatting issues that were hard to read. And I don't know what it was.
To zoom in, overlap.
It was kind of crazy. But I did have some of them where, man, they took pictures and did the handwriting, but they didn't like orient their pages the same way.
Oh, and so God, it was like, and you had to flip them around. Flip them around. For one part of the question, because the other part was upside down again, right. So then you had to flip it back around.
But I will say this, as we're talking about it, just so everybody knows that we read them all. Like, we do what we have to do to read it. We don't, like, look at it and be like, this sucks. I'm like, this is too hard to read. We don't grade it.
Zero. No, we actually have to try and interpret it.
We figure out a way to get it read.
Oh, goodness. So, sorry, we made the assumption, in case you missed it, Mr. O and I actually know each other from AP reading, which is grading AP exams, and so we just finished doing that a few weeks ago. So, if you listen to our 90 Day Fiancé podcast, we had kind of talked about that. I know we just kind of assumed this is the same crowd, and by and far, I think it is a subset of our 90 Day crew, but just in case.
So, if you didn't know too, then we do end the show, because that's it. We covered everything that was on the show.
Yep.
We do end the show every week by giving naming a student of the week, a class dunce, and then each of us gives a life lesson. So, Miss H, who was your student of the week this week?
Student of the week, I said, went to Jessica's dad. He doesn't want you to mistake that he supports these decisions, but at the same time, I also appreciated that he wasn't trying to actually actively sabotage anything.
Okay.
You know, he voiced his concerns and then that was it, take it or leave it. But, you know, doesn't mean I support your decisions, but I support you.
Right. So, funny enough, I went with Chevelle's mom for more or less doing the same thing. Letting her know, hey, I think this is a bad idea. I'm not going to like stop you. I'm not going to get in your way. I still want to be a part of your life. I'm still going to watch your kid, you know, all these things. But this is them. And also kind of like gently reminding her, be like, hey, remember that other time you thought things were going to work out? Remember how that did? Just be careful. Be careful out there, guys.
Well, and then I was going to say, because, you know, then you might argue, well, are these parents enabling? And I would say that probably more so not. And especially in, you know, Jessica's situation, you have her sister who cut her off, right?
Right.
And if you're saying, like, what's the opposite of an enabling parent? That would be the course of action, right? To cut them, not cut them off, cut them out.
Right.
Cut them out of their life. And doesn't change anything, right? Jessica's still with Maurice. She still doesn't talk to her sister and her niece. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't matter that they cut her out of their lives. You know, it didn't change her actions. So, I mean, the best you can do is, you know, say, I don't support this decision, but, you know, I still love you and I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm still here for if things go bad, I'm still here to pick up the pieces with you. Like that's what the parent's supposed to do. So how about your class dunce?
Ugh, my class dunce was Sean. How have you never even seen this person's face in real life, but you're going to put up $85,000 when you have six kids? You are the worst dad ever.
So I thought the worst dad ever is the one who couldn't remember his kids' names. No. So he was my class dunce.
Oh, gosh. Yes. That is true. He couldn't remember their names. It's not a good look, Dad. Come on.
Not at all. Couldn't remember their names. He couldn't remember how many times he's been engaged. It's just like,
oh, gosh.
What?
I know. Write it down somewhere. You need it like in your wallet or something.
Like that's okay. I usually don't Pop support getting tattoos with names on them, but that's the kind of one you could be a community.
Maybe you do. Maybe you do need these names.
Maybe
on
you
there.
Need to be like the guy from Memento and just have the tattoos everywhere. My children's names are okay. Look at every time you look in the mirror because he wasn't shy about getting tattoos.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe on his fingers, but he may run out of fingers soon.
That's what I'm saying. If you just did it like right on the inside of your forearm. Like a cheat sheet. Oh, there they are. Okay, got them.
Oh, goodness. All right, what about your life lesson?
So I'm going to go with, I mean, it's a pretty standard one for this series, but it goes with your class dunce. Don't send money to someone you've never seen, whether they're in prison or not.
Yeah, that's true. Mine is somewhere in that ballpark as well. So my life lesson is just because you've talked about deep, meaningful things for 3 months does not mean you really know someone. And I would argue that it takes years to really know someone, mm-hmm. which doesn't mean you can't be in a relationship with them. It just means don't trust them a lot with your money or your life.
Yeah. So those are things that come up. Like, you wouldn't know if you've been dating somebody for 3 months, and this is a different mm-hmm. than other years, you wouldn't know if they have like a huge football gambling problem because you never right. dated them during football season. Right?
Oh, so, sure. Like, yeah.
Those are things that you can't know unless you've actually been there with them through time, through a whole year. Like, how do they act at yeah. different parts of the year?
Yes, I was going to say, I feel like I had a girlfriend where that had happened, where she started dating a guy and it was off season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things were fine. She spent a lot of time with them. And then as soon as football season started, it was like this guy disappeared because it would be like, you know, football's on like almost every day now.
Yeah, it is now. It drives me crazy. Yeah, I liked it better. I liked it better when you just had to pay attention on Sunday and you had everything.
Yes, right. And maybe Mondays. Yeah. And then, yeah. And now it's like every day. And so it was just like either that or he was like dealing with his fantasy football. And so it was pretty much she like didn't see him during football season. She's like, what is this business? I didn't sign up for this.
Right. Exactly.
But you would never know.
You would That's never true. Know. You never know who is like does crazy Halloween stuff. You never know.
Oh,
like,
gosh, is obsessed.
Yeah.
With Christmas.
Oh yeah, obsessed with Christmas. You don't know who just disappears off the face of the earth for a month and does drugs when they're a Burning Man. Like, you don't know unless you go the whole year. Yeah.
True. Yep, things like that. Okay, so that covers it. So I think we're going to continue trying to release on a Monday?
Yeah, we'll see. Well, probably about then. That seems about right.
Yeah, so in the future, you can expect this episode released on Mondays. And then also Mondays, we release our 90 Day Fiancé podcast episode that covers Happily Ever After, which airs on Sundays, and The Other Way, which airs on Mondays. And we usually record like right after The Other Way.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So check out one of those things. Leave us a review. Good. Send us some feedback. And we'll see you all soon.
See everybody next week. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Bye.